Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, December the 9th, Pope Francis urges theologians to shun ideology and adopt an interdisciplinary and cross-disciplinary approach to illuminate our divided world. We mark the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of Victims of the Crime of Genocide and Prevention of this Crime. But first, all eyes on Syria as long-time ruler Assad's exit opens the floor to a range of possible scenarios. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Over the past few days, the world has been looking on with shock as rebel forces take over huge swathes of Syria with lightning speed. On Sunday, the rebels announced their capture of Damascus, officially putting an end to 53 years of rule by the Assad family. The Assad regime promoted itself as a defender of religious minorities, and one of the biggest questions about the rebel victory has been what it means for these minority groups, Kurds, Shias, Christians and others. In an interview with Vatican Radio, Father Elia Bajat, a Franciscan friar in Aleppo, explains why many Christians are celebrating the downfall of the Assad government.
Anzitutto, i cristiani sono, come tutti i siriani, ormai sfiniti e molto stanchi.
Christians are like every other Syrian, completely exhausted by years of living under the regime. There's no development, there's no economic growth. We're not living, we're surviving.
Si sopravvive, direi. Si sopravvive.
In the last two or three years in Idlib province, these groups have shown tolerance to Christians, and they've started to return Christians their confiscated property. Also, since they entered Aleppo, and as they've been moving south, they've been continually sending very strong messages of tolerance to all minorities, including Christians.
Tutto questo ci rassicura un po'.
All of this reassures us a bit, and the fact that today too the head of the rebels said he didn't want to rule the country himself but left the previous prime minister and government in place, this tells us that there's a serious desire to not change the country toward a sort of extremist mentality. The leader of the rebels himself said that the armed conflict is just part of a greater project, and it's not an end in itself. We hope that what happened this morning unblocks the political situation in Syria, and also we hope that the international community does its part to stabilize the country and help Syrians to dialogue and develop a new constitution that respects the rights of all Syrians. This is our hope, and now we'll see how things turn out.
Ecco, questa è la nostra speranza. Ovviamente vediamo poi come saranno le cose.
And that was Father Elia Bajat, a Franciscan friar based in Aleppo. Thanks to Joe Tullock for that report. Meanwhile, Israel on Monday reportedly launched strikes on suspected chemical and long-range weapon sites in Syria to allegedly keep them from the rebels who seized Damascus. And in central Gaza, as Nathan Morley reports, Israeli airstrikes killed scores of people, including children.
Gaza's civil defence says 10 people were killed and several others wounded in an Israeli attack on a group of Palestinians in Gaza City. Another 15 individuals, including women and children, were killed and others injured in an Israeli strike on a house in a refugee camp. Israel has been operating a massive offensive against Hamas in the Gaza Strip to retaliate against Hamas's rampage through the southern Israeli border last year. So far, the Palestinian death toll has risen to 44,708. Amid all of this, the spokesperson for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, Louise Wateridge, has described the humanitarian situation in Gaza as being extremely bad. Wateridge said that Gazans are greatly in need of life-saving essential items as they're deprived of many basic essentials of life. The UN has also called for the immediate delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, emphasizing the dire conditions of over over 500,000 Palestinians as winter approaches. The UN said as winter sets in, some 545,000 people in Gaza are living in damaged buildings and makeshift shelters, underscoring the urgency of ensuring that thousands of tarpaulins and repair materials can be safely brought to the Strip without delay. Elsewhere, one person was killed and four soldiers injured on Monday in an Israeli drone strike on a civilian car in southern Lebanon. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
And in Haiti, at least 110, mostly elderly people, were brutally murdered by gang members in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince, according to a human rights group over the weekend. The National Human Rights Defence Network said a local gang leader had targeted them after his son fell ill and subsequently died. The gang leader reportedly consulted a voodoo priest who blamed elderly locals practicing witchcraft for the boy's mystery illness. The United Nations said that the number of people killed in Haiti so far this year in spiralling gang violence has reached a staggering 5,000. And the dangers of ideology and polarisation were at the core of Pope Francis's discourse on Monday to participants in an international conference organised by the Vatican Dicastery for Culture and Education at the Pontifical Lateran University, discussing the future of theology. As Lisa Zengarini reports, the Pope invited them to develop a creative and inclusive approach to theology rooted in faith to make it relevant in today's divided society.
In his address, Pope Francis reaffirmed the crucial role of theologians in the Church and for society at large, likening theology to a light that illuminates and reveals the world while remaining invisible. Theology is like that, he said. It works quietly and humbly so that the light of Christ and his gospel can emerge. He therefore urged theologians to remain rooted in friendship with Christ and love for humanity, engaging with both the beauty and suffering of the world. As participants explore fundamental questions of theology's relevance, direction, and role in addressing contemporary challenges, Pope Francis highlighted the importance of collaboration between men and women theologians and the need for inclusive theological perspectives. He remarked that an all-male theology is an incomplete theology. The Pope then shared his desire that theology may help to rethink how to think, to better grasp the complexity of reality. Simplification, he warned, kills reality, gives rise to unilateral thinking, and it generates fragmentation and polarization, which is precisely what ideologies do. They flatten reality to a single idea, which they then repeat obsessively and manipulate.
L'ideologia è una semplificazione che uccide.
As an antidote to simplification, Pope Francis highlighted the importance of interdisciplinary and cross-disciplinary approaches, urging theologians to engage with other fields, such as philosophy, science, and the arts. Finally, Pope Francis called for making theological studies more accessible, noting the growing interest, especially among middle-aged adults, in deepening their faith and education. Theology, he argued, could serve as a guide for those seeking purpose and renewal at a critical phase of their lives. I am Lisa Zengarini.
Over the weekend, the College of Cardinals became a bit bigger as 21 men received their red hats from Pope Francis on December the 7th. Coming from 17 countries, the newly created Cardinals demonstrated the universal nature of the Church. One of them, the French-born Archbishop of Algiers in Algeria, spoke to Vatican Radio about his first act as Cardinal.
Cardinal Jean-Paul Vesco spent his second evening as a cardinal sharing a meal with the poor. Together with the Vatican's Athletics Club, he shared a dinner and small gifts with those waiting outside the homeless shelter just outside St. Peter's Colonnade.
I was very happy to be invited by Biblioteca Vaticana to join this night and this supper. And, of course, it was a great experience also. How can I say, I want to... It's a lot of love. And I was very happy to do that and just to offer the good thing I had to live, I received, the huge gift I received. I wanted to share this gift.
Born in Lyon, France, in 1962, the newly created cardinal started working as a lawyer before joining the Dominican Order at the age of 34. 16 years later, he was appointed the Bishop of Oran, Algeria, and served as a delegate for the diocese ahead of the International Assembly of Algeria. In 2022, Pope Francis appointed him as the Bishop of Algiers, and now he's joined the other 254 men with the rank of cardinal.
I was touched by the welcoming of the other cardinal and the simplicity of the welcoming and, of course, the sympathy of the Pope and the relationship. Yeah, we feel brothers.
And that was the newly created Cardinal Jean-Paul Vesco speaking to Vatican Radio. On the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of the Crime of Genocide and of the Prevention of this Crime, we reflect on the progress made in addressing genocide, while acknowledging the continued challenges in preventing such atrocities worldwide. As Francesca Merlo reports, it's impossible not to recognise the extent of violence and misery plaguing our world today. Yet we are reminded that there is always hope that the international community may learn from the past and come together to free people and peoples from heinous mistreatment.
On the 9th of December 1948, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. Yet 76 years later, as we observe the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of Genocide, accusations of genocide, defined as the deliberate destruction of a group based on ethnicity, nationality, religion, or race, persists globally. Despite the convention's significance, it has not eradicated genocide. Today, concerns are particularly acute in Palestine and in Sudan's Darfur region. In May 2024, the UN Secretary-General's Special Advisor on Genocide Prevention warned of strong allegations of genocide in Sudan, citing identity-based attacks on civilians. Meanwhile, rights groups, including Amnesty International, have described Israel's actions in Gaza as genocide, claims denied by Israel. Pope Francis has called for investigations, noting that these allegations warrant scrutiny under international law. Such cases echo the grim legacies of past genocides. From 1915 to 1923, the Armenian genocide saw around 2 million Armenians killed under Ottoman rule through death marches, massacres, and forced deportations. More recently, in 1994, the Rwandan genocide resulted in the killing of over 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus in just 100 days. The international community's slow response compounded the crisis, with UN peacekeepers failing to intervene effectively. These tragedies highlight both failures and progress. The Rwandan genocide led to the development of the Responsibility to Protect doctrine, which emphasizes a global obligation to prevent mass atrocities. There have also been successes, such as NATO's intervention in the Bosnian War, which helped end violence following the Srebrenica massacre. While genocide scares persist, recognizing atrocities and responding decisively is essential, and this holds true whether or not the violence is legally classified as genocide. As Pope Francis has said, war is always a defeat. Always. I'm Francesca Merlo.
And that's all for this edition of Vatican and World News. Join us tomorrow at the same time for more. Follow us on our website, on Facebook, X, and Instagram. My thanks go to Gabriele Di Domenico in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Bye-bye.